As I was reading this passage from Luke's Gospel, Luke 17, 11 to 19, I found myself wondering two things. Is wholeness the same as being cured? And secondly, is healing a removal of all illness? These are indeed, I think, questions of tension and wonder for us as Christians, particularly as medical science continues to push the boundaries of how we view healing and wholeness. You know, some of the most profound lessons in life often come from the most unexpected places. And I suppose that this story we've read and Barbara read for us from Luke 17 this morning is one such example. It's a story that takes place in the borderlands between Samaria and Galilee. And the first part of the passage, 11 to 14, is a healing story. Jesus responds to a cry for help from 10 lepers. And all of the sufferers were healed in an act of obedience. And then in the second part, verse 15 to 19, the story takes a surprising turn. For only a rejoicing Samaritan returned to thank Jesus. Now, Samaritans were a people who honored the holy traditions of the Hebrew scriptures, which we have in our Bible in the Old Testament. But soon after the death of King Solomon, the prophecy of Ahijah, which we read in 1 Kings 11, was fulfilled with the division of the ancient kingdom of Israel into two separate kingdoms, Israel in the north and Judah in the south. And the Samaritans were a people who were descendants of those who lived in the northern kingdom of Israel when the land was split. And as such, they centered their faith on Mount Gerizim rather than on Jerusalem. And there was, we know, a mutual and long-standing resentment between the Samaritans and the Jews whose faith centered on Jerusalem. So this Samaritan man would have been doubly unacceptable. He was a total outcast. He was a foreigner. And he suffered from a feared disease. Lepers were kept on the very edge of society. The disease was often seen as the punishment for sin. And people were frightened of catching it and becoming outcasts themselves. Leprosy was once the scourge of all illnesses. It was incurable for the most part. And those with it were shunned and shunted off into separate places, ostracized and feared. I suppose that in our culture today, the word cancer, or admitting that you have that disease, instills an irrational fear in some people. And some people with AIDS feel the same way. Just think about the Tom Hanks film Philadelphia, in which he plays a young man living, indeed dying, from AIDS. And remember the awful way he was treated as a consequence of his illness. And perhaps then you will get some idea of the way that people with leprosy were and are treated. If you've not seen the film Philadelphia, then perhaps you'd think of the film Ben-Hur and remember how Judah Ben-Hur's mother and sister lived on the edge of society, shunned by the whole community because they suffered with leprosy. Leprosy, or as we call it now, Hansen's disease, is one of the oldest recorded diseases in history. And today, although it's the least contagious communicable disease, and although most people are naturally immune, it's still very, very prevalent in many of the poorest parts of South and Central America, of Africa, and of Asia, with millions of people susceptible to the disease. There are, we're told, around 300,000 new cases of leprosy reported each year. And although the infectious nature of leprosy can be stopped within a few days by proper treatment, And although leprosy can now be cured by a 6-month multi-drug course of treatment, although these things are true, because of the poverty of its victims, thousands and thousands of people and their families are each year left permanently scarred by this disease, which begins by the loss of feeling in a patch of skin, and which is capable of causing disability and even blindness if untreated. It attacks the nerves under the skin. It leads to a loss of feeling. It leads to a disfiguring paralysis and unfelt injury of the hands and feet and face. Leprosy, even today, is surrounded by myths and stigma and fear, which mean that it is more than a medical condition. And so organisations like the Leprosy Mission certainly have their work cut out educating and treating and trying to bring God's healing to those who live with this disease. So the condition of leprosy may then well be translated into our feeling alone, or misunderstood, or helpless, perhaps actively shunned. And feelings of being alone and helpless surely attack most of us at one time or another. Feeling misunderstood often happens in the classroom or the workplace. And while the scene recounted in our gospel story today may be unfamiliar, there are plenty of modern day equivalents and experiences for us to draw upon. Well, Luke begins his telling of this story, and as the story opens, Jesus encounters 10 individuals who have leprosy. And despite the fact that they were 9 Jews and 1 Samaritan, they had banded together because of their illness. And it's a mark of the horror of this illness with which they lived, that they lived together, ignoring the ethnicity and the distinctions which would otherwise have kept them apart. And these 10 people keep a formal distance. It was required by law. But they came near enough to cry out to Jesus. And they cried and cried their appeal over and over. An appeal not for healing, but simply for mercy. Jesus, have mercy on us. But I think that it's clear, given their circumstances, that what they hoped mercy would bring would be a healing from this awful disease of leprosy. Well, apparently Jesus didn't see them at first. Luke tells us when Jesus saw them, implying that they must have cried for some time. When he did see them, though, he responded. He didn't come near them or touch them. He didn't even say to them, "You are cured." Instead, Jesus told them, leprous as they were, to go and show themselves to the priests in the temple, which was the normal procedure when an ill person was cured. The priest acted as a kind of health inspector who certified that a cure had indeed taken place and declared the person clean and whole once again, an action that was necessary for them to be accepted again into their community, into the life of their families. We read about that law in Leviticus 14. Now, in nearly every miracle that Jesus performed for someone else, there was an element of faith on the part of the other person. And here, Jesus was putting the faith of these 10 people to the test by asking them to act as though they had already been cured. He didn't cure them. He didn't lay his hand upon them. He simply told them to go and show themselves to the priest in the temple. And it was as they were going to see the priests that it happened. On their way to the temple to see the priest, they realized that their clawed, gnarled hands were relaxing, beginning to straighten out again. Their sense of touch, which was lost, was beginning to return. And as they reached up and felt the skin on their face, they didn't feel a leprous skin. They felt a skin that was whole, a skin which had regained its sensitivity once again. Now one of the 10 men, the Samaritan, turned back, praising God, we are told, returning to Jesus to give thanks for his healing. Why did he go to Jesus and not go with the others to the temple? Well, perhaps his decision has something to do with the fact that he was a Samaritan. In 129 BC, the Samaritan temple had been destroyed by the Jews. There was nowhere for the Samaritan to go to offer sacrifice required by the law. And so instead, he returns to Jesus, the new temple. His praising of God shows that he had seen the hand of God in the cure and that he was ready to let everyone know about it. You couldn't have escaped the praise that he was offering as he made his way back to Jesus. And when he found Jesus, he acted with humility. He prostrated himself on the ground before his master. He thanked Jesus. And it's only at this point in the story that Luke tells us that this man is a Samaritan. It might have been expected that the Samaritan would have been the last person to return and give thanks to a Jewish healer. But he was the first and evidently the only one who returned. It's a fact that people do not give thanks quickly. If they don't give thanks quickly, they rarely do at all. And Luke tells us that in a series of questions, Jesus expresses disappointment in the other nine. He does this in his continuing dialogue with the Pharisees, who were always looking for Jesus to fail, who were always challenging him. And Jesus expresses his disappointment in the nine, presumably Jewish people. All of them were cleansed. All of them had an equal motive for rejoicing and for giving thanks. And it might have been expected that all 10 of them would have had a motive for returning, giving thanks, praising God, thanking Jesus. But apparently the other 9 were so absorbed in their newfound happiness that they couldn't spare a thought for its source. We need to note from this story that Jesus encouraged the man who came back. He told them to get up, to go on his way, and he assured them that his faith had made him well. Presumably, the other 9 lepers had faith as well. That was the common prerequisite for Jesus' miracles. But certainly, as Luke tells us, this Samaritan man had faith and he had gratitude. It's possible that in this story we should take the verb to mean more than cure. It's translated literally as he has saved you. And Jesus recognized in this Samaritan that faith that results in salvation. The man's faith had saved him, not merely cured him. And so Jesus sent the man off with the assurance that it was well with his soul. It was well with his soul as it was with his body. Full restoration means a saved soul as well as a sound body. Today here in church, I don't think we're curing anyone from leprosy. Later on in baptism, the other service, we will be recognizing that faith results in a saved soul, as well as in the thanksgiving that is due God in Jesus Christ. And having received this teaching from Luke's Gospel, the message of salvation for all people, we also face the challenge which is spelled out in the words of Jesus and illustrated by the story of one of his great deeds. And it's the challenge to be like the one who returned and not like the other 9. It's the challenge for us to actually turn back, praising God aloud with our voices, and to fall on our faces before Jesus
giving him the thanks. Theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote, "Only they who give thanks for little things receive the big things." We prevent God from giving us the great spiritual gifts he has in store for us because we do not give thanks for daily gifts. I suppose the challenge for each one of us is that each night as we lie in bed, we need to imagine that we, like the Samaritan, have fallen in thanksgiving at the feet of Jesus and simply list some of the things, the little things, for which we are grateful. And then in the morning before we rise, in the same spirit and by the same spirit, to simply list some of the other things for which we're thankful. And I think cultivating a life of gratitude can be that simple. As simple as saying, "Thank you, Jesus," in all circumstances. Thanks be to God.